Hello, we're going to talk to Advocate Debbie Ainsley today about the subject of domestic abuse. There's something that I am very, that's uppermost in my mind, and is that someone who, a victim of domestic abuse is a unique victim, because they live in constant fear of it being repeated, and it typically is someone that is close to you or used to be close to you, and to get out of that situation that would be quite difficult. Now, Advocate Debbie Ainsley will tell us about some solutions to this problem. One of them would be protection order.
Yes.
So, good morning to you. Let's talk.
Hello, Hank. Yes, indeed, you can get a protection order against domestic violence, including physical abuse and more. You can get it whether you're still sharing the same property or whether you're not. If you're now being stalked or harassed at work, or that's included under the protection order.
So how do you get it, and what does it entail?
Okay, so you go to the magistrate's court in the area, and they will probably have a domestic violence section or a protection order section. If it's a very small magistrate's court, it will just be the normal magistrate will hear it. And you go in, and you do not need legal representation. There's a pre-printed form even that you can use, and you have to under oath say what has happened and what you need protection from. At that point, there is no need to let the other side know. You do it on your own. And you can, at that point, if you've made out a case that you are being abused and that you are a victim of domestic violence, you fit within the categories and all the rest of it, you can get an interim protection order, an IPO, interim protection order, which is effective from the minute that it is served on the other person. And you also will take it to your nearest police station so that they're aware of it. And often it is served by the police. That is obviously for your own protection. That is basically an ex parte application. So you can get that based on your facts. You get the interim protection order. But it comes into effect when served. And then the other side, other party, has an opportunity to oppose it, or it becomes a final order.
Okay, there are obviously many scenarios, but let's assume a couple live together and that the husband abuses the wife. I know it could be the other way around as well. And it could be physical or emotional, but let's not worry about that for the moment. So a protection order will now be issued against the husband. Let's assume he is the victimizer. What does the protection order do?
So what happens when that domestic violence protection order is issued is that it gives the police ability to arrest the person, basically. So they now have a court order, and all court orders need to be obeyed, but we know how they get disregarded. But if they then violate whatever's in that order, so if they do what the order is protecting you from their actions of doing, then the police have to arrest the person. So that means that you've got a tool to stop what is happening to you. This is what the protection order is. Sorry. You must remember that previously, any domestic violence, when you called the police, it was a case of, no, this is a private family matter. And the Domestic Violence Act and that protection order now says it's no longer private. It is now a duty. The act says there's a duty on the police to act. And when the order is issued, the onus of proof, once an interim order protection order has been granted, if you complain that it's been violated, the police have to act as if that's the truth. They don't even need to go further on it.
Okay, but and that would be the legal side, and I do think about the other side. And your husband is now been arrested, so it means he can't go to work, which means he probably he might lose his job. So you've got a whole lot of things happening around the legal aspect. And there's nothing we can do about it, but I'm sure there are resources that can help in those situations. Are there?
Very limited if you're relying on him for income and he doesn't get income while he's arrested, then that's obviously, child grants are not going to cover it, or your landlord's still going to kick you out if you haven't paid your rent, kind of thing. Going through, so that's what lands people in that bind. So when asking for the protection order, you wanting to take into consideration, and the courts do take into consideration. So, for example, they might say that he's got to move out of the property, or his firearm is removed. He's still got to continue paying rent. He's just not allowed to live there. Or if the property, the home is big enough, he's not allowed access into this part of the home. Or, and then hopefully, if he is arrested, it would be taken to court shortly after that, and he's freed again, but given a big enough fright. But it's not perfect, and in fact, there are unfortunately times where I caution against a protection order because of the psychological escalation that will occur when he gets served that domestic violence protection. So it's not a solve everything for sure. If you're dependent financially, and let's just not forget that if you have been beaten or harassed or insulted, or already are, because one of the aspects of domestic violence is financial abuse. So I've had a case where somebody's salary is being paid into her husband's account, and she has no money, even though she's working, and she's if she could get her money, and she would could have been saving, and she could have been able to leave, and then she was also beaten, and then psychologically she does not have the ability to break away, and those cycles of domestic violence are often, I beat you up, I withhold your money and everything, then after a very bad session, I would apologize and promise it's never going to happen again, and then that cycle is repeated often enough, and then you're walking on eggshells so that you don't upset the person, and you don't have the psychological wherewithal, let alone the financial and the motivation. I mean, you're probably depressed, you're petrified of, for your children. There's a massive psychological part, but what the Domestic Violence Act does, it takes it out of the realm of private and gives you some tools. Use them and how to use them is still problematic within that power dynamic, within the family and so on. That's still real. And unfortunately, also the other thing that happens is we go in some divorces where there has been some abuse, or but there's not that terrible situation that people used to find themselves in. But it helps for the divorce to say, "Hey, I got a protection order against him."
So
It's
it's more a
open for
threat.
abuse
It's
as
a
well.
threat against the abuser, which might limit his actions. Am I right?
Say that again.
I
Say that
say
again, hey.
it really is a threat against the abuser, and say it's some authority that says, "Hey, you are behaving badly, and if you do this again, you're going to get punished." So that is a deterrent. It's a deterrent, but it's not a cure-all.
It can be a deterrent. It can also be an escalation and a motivation to take further action, but yes, its purpose is a deterrent, and but mostly to give you the tools to be able to protect yourself. I can't address all the psychological aspects and everything, but if your life is in danger, or you are in danger, that it gives you the ability to get a response quick from the police. Remember, part of that process is you are reporting to your police station. So when you phone the police, that you phone that police station, they have already a record that, oh my gosh, this person has already caused already a danger, and they can react from. That's in the perfect world, of course, but it does at least enable you. A even the security companies will, you know, you alert a lot of people have got private security companies that, and that enables them to even. I think they do it under citizen's arrest, but it's but if there's a final or even interim protection order, and they're aware of it, and that person breaks it, the security company can haul him off without him having to say, "But I didn't break a window. I haven't done anything." No, there's an IPO, and it says that you aren't allowed to be on the property. You are. You're breaking. You know. You now need to be arrested. It just gives that just that little bit faster reaction and protection in that way. And then, of course, protection orders include you can't come within so much distance, and that, and that does assist when the person can't get within 300 meters of you, and you can already react at that point. You don't have to wait for them to do a harm before you call somebody. They've already been 300 meters. That's sufficient.
So the protection order is a tool, one of the tools. My own view is that someone who is living in fear of repeated abuse probably have to reevaluate the entire life situation and be prepared to make major, major changes. And I'm thinking of moving out of the same city, changing jobs, just moving away and living. Cutting lifestyle, size, income, and be prepared to say, I am going to change everything and start elsewhere.
I think that the protection order tries to prevent that from being necessary. The act prevents that from being necessary. But reality is that we're looking at an entire range of behaviors. The psychopath, you know, the antisocial personality disorder, they're not going to be trained by a protection order. So while it gives tools to in law enforcement and that to step in and step in early, those newspaper headlines about, you know, he shot his wife and all his kids and then himself or something, protection order doesn't help in that. You know,
No.
he's prepared to lose his life. So what good is a protection order? And the police can't get there from, oh gosh, he's here with a gun and, you know, and he uses it. I mean, that's not. No police force is going to be able to react quickly enough to that. So in those circumstances, yes, you'll have to accept that you're moving. You know, your life is about to change entirely. And we've got shelters that women can go to, I presume families. They're taking women and children, and where the people that address is not known, and so the abuser can't find it, and then they are provided with shelter and clothing and food and everything. But if the kids go to the same school, then he finds them through that, you know. So, yeah, it's not a say of all, you know. But if somebody is financially abusing, just for example, like the case that I was speaking about previously, the court can order a maintenance amount. So they can be under the same roof. They can be, and he's saying, I'm not buying clothes for you, or no, I'm not giving you shopping. That's one of the things that we do see is that the abuser will take over doing the shopping just so that the victim doesn't know what food. She can't choose her own food. She can't go out to go shopping. She's got no petrol. And the court, hearing the protection order, can order that that monies are paid into the victim's account as well. So say now you've got a person who's withholding funds as a means of control, which is the abuse. The court can order an amount to be paid, and can order it to come off his salary and into his into the other person, into the victim and victim's account. So So there are the powers are quite wide ranging, taking firearms away or any other weapons considered dangerous to her. So you can still continue living in the same house, but now his gun that he's threatened you to kill you with is taken away. He's got to work a bit harder to find another gun. I don't know if that solves your problem if you've been threatened with a gun, but maybe a combination of threatened with a gun plus a financial order that his salary is garnished and put into your bank account, plus you go to a shelter. All of those things together might provide protection, but it really just depends. It's wide ranging, and the psychological impact of the step that is required for a victim psychologically is a giant after years.
And they have to be prepared to take a giant leap. That's really, in summary, what my thinking is.
And that victim is normally being told that they're a piece of rubbish, that they can't do anything right, that there's no ways they would make it out in the big bad world without this so-called protector who is the abuser. The abuser always, not always, the abuser often plays himself or herself in the role of protector and making the life possible. And there's a real fear to overcome as well.
Yeah, it's the only one with a brain in the house is the victimizer.
Exactly,
Yeah.
exactly. So it's complex.
It's a tough one, but it's good to know that you can get a protection order without too much hassle.
Yes, the and then once and it's only effective once it's been served, and then you can't say I've got an IPO, I didn't tell you about it, and I'm now going to wield it. It's got to be served. It's got to be delivered to the abuser. That's a scary moment indeed. And then they get a chance to go back to court. And one of the things we see often is they will ask for a protection order as well. And then they'll say that this is what she's done, and or this is what, and the other thing that we find often is that the abuser will record. So in these domestic relationships, the abuser will prod and poke and antagonize, and then as soon as the person eventually retaliates or tries to stand up for herself. Now we're just using the him and her because that's the most common, but it can definitely be the other way. Then the abuser records the conversation because we've all got cell phones with cameras and everything, and records the breakdown of the victim who's finally reached the end of the tether, and then plays that and says, "Hey, oh, the domestic violence, I've got this video, watch this reaction." Meantime, it's been prodded beforehand knowingly, and then knows he's going to get a reaction. And then the abuser also feels, it pushed to a limit, and then stands up for herself or retaliates or has a screaming match or says, "I'm going to kill myself," and takes pills, or and then the abuser records that and then says, "Yeah, you see, she's the one who's not right. She's the one." And the abuser lauds it, and meantime, and the victim ends up saying, "This is not who I am. I hate the side of myself," and that goes into the psychological harm of it, because then she starts believing the rubbish that the abuser has given her.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. You did cover it, but I just want to point out that domestic abuse can be different, can take different forms. It could be physical violence, and it can be emotional, and I'll call it violence, but emotional abuse. And emotional abuse might be a little bit more difficult to prove, but it is real. It is real.
It's absolutely real, and we've got emotional, psychological. That's the category. We've got religion. So where you're not allowed to attend your own church, or you have to attend the other partner's church, or there's also the financial, which I mentioned, and then there's also just harassment. And even under the definition of abuse is that children are witnessing abuse is also considered in the definition of domestic violence. So if if your children watch you being beaten by your husband, they are also victims of the domestic violence, even if they not hit themselves. And the courts tend to forget that sometimes, that how traumatic, because if the woman is brave enough to leave, and I'm going to go on a little bit of a side meander here, if the woman does manage to get her psychological over her psychological hurdles, whether it's whether it's with assistance of a psychologist or a counselor or through marriage counseling, and then she realizes, hey, no, this is just not okay, and then she takes those children away, those children have witnessed that domestic violence. Then we get to the divorce, and the court says, oh no, we've got to, the children have got to go to the dad every week or every second weekend or whatever it is, and the children now don't want to go. Mom has been abused for the entirety of the children's lives, violent abuse. The children have witnessed that. The children might not have been abused ever, and that's the case that happens. That happens in these divorce cases, and these and later afterwards when they're still fighting about contact. The children don't want to go to the father, not because he's hurt them, but he's hurt their mother. And then the church, then he turns around and continues the what I would label as abuse, and says, she is keeping the kids away from me. It's parental alienation. And one of the things that the court does when it's true parental alienation, takes the kids away from the alienated parent and places them with the parent they've been alienated from. So these children who have come through watching the domestic violence, watching the abuse, and then not wanting to have relationship with their father, the mother who's been the subject of that is just trying to protect her children as they get older, very sure that they're going to be suffering, if not physical abuse, psychological abuse from this man. And then he claims parental alienation 5 years after the divorce, and the courts say, yes, it does look like that because of the language of the children or whatever reason, and they've stopped them from seeing the mother, place them with the father, and that's now meant to solve the problem. And then after 3 months or 6 months, the mother can have some contact again. And they forget that this domestic violence background is what caused it. So it affects the children, and the Act provides for that, but it is often overlooked that a child who has witnessed their own mother being abused, or their father for that matter, will have a very complicated relationship with their parent. And if that parent is capable of abusing their spouse that they purportedly love, what is protecting them from abusing, what is protecting the children from being abused by that same person? Love? No, that didn't work the first time around.
It's a
Okay.
very tough and complex situation, but and you and I are not going to solve it today. But I think you've covered the protection order issue, and that's
If I may just add one more thing to that, you can get a protection order after you have left. So if the relationship is you had a relationship with somebody and you did leave, and then they, because you've left, they are starting to harass you, and it could be coming to your workplace or phone calls or coming to your new home, or that doesn't end the domestic relationship. The domestic relationship is ended, but in terms of the act, it is still considered a domestic relationship. So if you've been in a romantic relationship with somebody, you lived with them for a little while, you didn't have to be married, you can have lived with somebody, had a kid, realized he's absolutely terrible, moved out, and now he's still harassing you or still following you or stalking you or phoning your work, it still falls under the Domestic Violence Act. And you can still get an interim protection order and then get it confirmed. Remember, if he doesn't oppose that, it just gets confirmed. If you've got to prove that you've served it, and if there's no opposition, it gets confirmed.
Well, that's a little less complicated than two people living together,
Yes.
and that's where I believe it'll be most effective.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I also want to mention, if you're living together, you can also like divide the house with an imaginary line, and that the person has, I spoke about it, you can get an order saying that they have to leave the house, even if they own the house, they can leave, they have to leave, pending the divorce or pending whatever else is going to happen, or counseling even, or treatment, or often abuse goes along with alcohol, abuse, you know, people who've got who suffer from substance abuse disorder, be that alcohol or drugs or whatever. And drugs is difficult as well because they're irresponsible when they're high, and they when they need the next fix, they are just impossible. So but the house can also, you can also have separate places. So, you know, if you've got a garden cottage, you can get an order that the person has to go live in the garden cottage and may not enter the main house. And obviously you're trying to keep the children as stable as possible. And then that gives you permission to change locks, for example.
Well,
Anyway.
it brings to mind the one of the things that I would imagine a protection order can do is to force the person to go for counseling.
Yeah, we don't do that very often because of counseling only works if the person that is is interested in counseling. You know, if they're if they're invested in it, then that will help. But if you just if you force someone just to go to sit in a therapist's stool without wanting to actually do, if they think there's nothing wrong with them, there's very little benefit for the therapy. But what often happens is co-parenting courses. There's even co-parenting post-divorce courses. There's and that's a little bit more helpful. And marriage counseling is often very helpful because they start reacting to their spouse in that session, and then you do actually make some progress. Not wildly successful, but partly. Involuntary admission in hospital to poor evaluation if they're really terrible. And if you can get them to see a psychiatrist, sometimes you can get medication that helps with some of the issues. But that would be unlikely to be ordered unless there's like this person started acting weirdly 2 years ago. I think they've got a brain tumor. Then you can maybe force them to go and be assessed. But I have not seen that. I've not seen where that has been ordered or successful, seeing a psychiatrist or a doctor.
Well,
Other than an involuntary admission.
that's a, okay. All right. It's no big solutions, but at least something. At least something.
Yeah. And we've discussed protection orders now in terms of the Domestic Violence Act, but there is also another act that can where you can get protection orders, and that's the Harassment Act. And that's you don't have to have any relationship. So the domestic violence, you know, it can be a child, it can be a cousin, and you know, whatever. There's some sort of relationship. But when there's no relationship and you're being stalked, or you've got a neighbor who harasses you every time you walk out your front door, the Harassment Act covers that. And it's got to be a repeated thing. So it's got to be something that it's not a one-off. You can't go to get a protection order for harassment with a one-off. But if there's a repeated action of harassing you, and it can be verbal, it can be stalking, and you know, someone puts a tracker on your car because they want to follow you, whether and obviously that is covered in domestic violence if that relationship. But if it's unrelated and it's just somebody who's decided that they like you, and I put like in inverted commas, then the Harassment Act is also gets protection order, and it's the same process, the same place you go to, and the same process. Getting a protection order against someone who's harassing you.
Okay, I think we can leave it. I think we can leave it there.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Hank.
Okay, thank you, Debbie. Thank you very much. You're always full of useful information.
Hopefully.
Okay,
Take good care.
speak to you soon. Bye.